So, imagine you just glance at your smartwatch.
Right.
It shows, 10,000 steps, and it's just this clean physical fact right there on your wrist.
Yeah, you feel pretty good about yourself.
Exactly. But what if that same watch is quietly telling an artificial intelligence that you're going to develop heart disease in 3 years, or maybe even commit a crime in 5?
I mean, that is the threshold we're standing on right now. The device you use to just check your text messages is, well, it's rapidly becoming a biological crystal ball. And the reflection it gives back is incredibly murky.
Yeah, it really is. Welcome to another deep dive, everyone. I'm your host, and today we're exploring how close we actually are to that reality.
A world where our biology and our behaviors are quantified, analyzed, and, judged by predictive algorithms. I'm here to help unpack the science behind this.
And our mission today is to unpack this incredible conversation that took place on March 12th at HMRI, which is the Huntington Medical Research Institute.
Right. This is part of the Pasadena Library's One City, One Story program.
Yeah. And the catalyst for the whole event is just fascinating. The panel was actually inspired by Leila Lalami's dystopian futurist novel, The Dream Hotel.
Which was the library's book selection for this year. And the novel paints this really chilling future of massive data harvesting, severe government overreach, and AI systems evaluating the most intimate details of human behavior.
It's intense. So the panel was moderated by Paul Roach. He's HMRI's Vice President of Development, and they had introductory context from the library director, Tim McDonald.
But the core scientific insights, they came from two really remarkable minds. Dr. Rashid Alavi, who's an AI and cardiovascular diagnostic fellow at Caltech and HMRI,
Right.
and Dr. Andrew Vasco Ramirez, a Kaiser Permanente neuroscientist who specializes in sleep.
So as we get into this, I want you, the listener, to ponder the same provocative question that the panel wrestled with.
Yeah, which is, if a system could predict your future actions and your health from your raw biological data, would you actually want it to?
It's a heavy question because to understand predictive AI, we first have to look at how science fundamentally views the human body in the first place.
Right.
Medicine used to treat the body like a mechanical clock. You find the broken gear, say a bad valve in the heart, you fix the gear, and boom, you cure the patient.
Yeah, and that mechanical view traces all the way back centuries to the philosopher René Descartes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was actually a crucial paradigm shift at the time. I mean, it stripped away all this ancient mysticism and gave early scientists the confidence to literally look under the hood of the human machine.
Right, to see how the gears actually turn.
Exactly. You had people like Luigi Galvani making frog legs twitch with static electricity, Alessandro Volta inventing the battery.
Wait, like the actual battery?
Yeah. And then Hans Berger inventing the EEG in 1929 to objectively record the brain's electricity. But while this was great for progress, it also created these intense silos in medicine.
I mean.
Well, for a very long time, if you were a cardiologist, you were essentially a plumber for the heart.
Right.
And if you were a neurologist, you were just an electrician for the brain.
Okay, let's unpack this because the human body isn't just a collection of isolated gears, right? It's this vast, interconnected electrical grid.
Exactly.
And we're finally recognizing that you cannot touch one part of the grid without sending a surge through the rest of it.
And that's exactly the shift to a systemic approach that Dr. Alavi was talking about.
Yeah.
He detailed how we now study heart-brain coupling.
Heart-brain coupling.
Yeah. For instance, the physical stiffening of an aorta directly impacts the workload of the left ventricle in your heart.
Oh, okay.
And that altered workload actually changes the blood flow to the brain, which in turn can alter cognitive function and even sleep architecture.
Wow.
It is one continuous feedback loop.
So they're intimately connected. But for the longest time, a doctor couldn't measure that entire grid at once. They could only look at one isolated metric, like the squiggly line of an ECG from back in 1924.
Right, just one tiny piece of the puzzle.
But now AI is essentially the first tool capable of reading the entire grid simultaneously.
Which brings us to multimodal AI. And this is just a profound leap in diagnostic capability.
It really is.
Because multimodal AI doesn't just ingest your electrical signals, it simultaneously processes your blood pressure readings, your MRI scans, your genetic markers.
It's just eating all this data.
Yeah, and even the acoustic sound waves of your heartbeat. all at once.
Okay, let's break down how that actually works in practice, because Dr. Alvai brought up a major breakthrough regarding a condition called heart failure with preserved ejection fraction.
Right, a very tricky condition.
Yeah, for anyone unfamiliar, this is where the heart pumps normally, meaning the ejection fraction is preserved, but the heart muscle has become too stiff to fill with blood properly between beats.
And it is notoriously difficult for human doctors to catch in its early stages.
Because it looks normal on the surface.
Exactly. Traditionally, to measure the rising pressure inside that stiffening left ventricle, a patient had to go into a catheterization lab.
Oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah, a doctor literally threads a wire up an artery in your leg or your wrist, navigating all the way into your heart just to get a pressure reading.
Which is incredibly invasive and risky and expensive.
Very. But Dr. Alavi's team is using AI to bypass that physical intrusion entirely.
This is the part that blows my mind.
Right. They are essentially turning your smartwatch into a virtual catheter. The AI looks at data from a standard ECG and a non-invasive optical pulse monitor on your wrist.
So no wires going up your leg?
None. The mechanics behind this are brilliant. The AI maps the micro delays between the electrical signal firing in your chest, which is captured by the ECG,
right,
and the physical pulse of blood finally reaching your wrist.
Oh, wow.
By analyzing those microscopic time differences, along with the specific shape of the pulse wave, the algorithm infers the stiffness of your arteries and calculates the pressure inside your heart.
That is wild. It's calculating physiological dynamics that a human brain physically cannot process in real time.
It's impossible for a human to see those patterns.
But, you know, here's where it gets really interesting for me. That massive efficiency introduces a huge philosophical tension regarding how we define knowledge in the first place.
Yeah, the old tortoise and the hare problem.
Exactly. Traditional science is like a tortoise, right? It acts like an architect. An architect needs to know how the foundation supports the walls before they build a theory. They demand to know why a biological mechanism happens.
While AI operates much more like a real estate appraiser.
Yes.
An appraiser doesn't care how the house was built or what materials are inside the walls.
They just don't care.
Right. It just looks at a million other houses, spots the statistical correlations, and tells you what this specific house is going to do on the market.
And Dr. Vasco Ramirez warned about this, right? That we're rapidly replacing slow causal science with fast correlative data.
He did. He actually referenced an old controversial Wired article titled, "The Hypothesis is Dead."
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. It argued that with enough data, algorithms will simply find the patterns that dictate reality, completely rendering the scientific method obsolete.
But correlation is not causation. Just because the AI spots a pattern in the micro delays doesn't mean it understands the anatomical reality of why the pressure is rising.
Exactly. If the machine only knows that A happens when B happens, it cannot explain the actual mechanism to a patient.
And if we shift our entire medical foundation to trusting unproven correlations, we risk losing our grasp on the underlying mechanics of human biology.
It's a huge risk.
And honestly, that blind spot is why I don't buy the narrative that Dr. Google or like an advanced medical chatbot is going to replace human practitioners anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, algorithmic thinking works beautifully for the 97% of textbook cases. But what happens when you are the 3% anomaly? When your biology isn't following the standard pattern, the AI just, it doesn't know what to do.
And Dr. Alavi brought up a fascinating paradox related to exactly that. You might assume that wearing a medical-grade diagnostic tool on your wrist means you'll rarely need to see a doctor.
Right, because you're monitoring yourself.
But the panel consensus was the exact opposite.
Mm.
Because these devices will constantly ping you with subtle and sometimes completely false alerts about your oxygen levels or your heart rate variability.
People are going to freak out.
Yes, people are going to run to the clinic much more frequently. We will demand a human to interpret the machine.
So the doctor becomes the ultimate reality checker for algorithmic panic.
That's a great way to put it. And taking that a step further, Dr. Vasco Ramirez suggested this dynamic could fundamentally elevate the medical profession.
How so?
Well, currently, doctors spend a vast amount of time acting as biological mechanics, right? Diagnosing a defined disease and matching it to a specific pill.
Yeah, fix the broken gear.
Right. But if AI can safely take over that mechanical diagnostic task, human practitioners could finally shift their focus to holistic health.
Meaning what exactly? Like, what does that look like?
Meaning the deeply human systemic issues that drive illness. He used the physical toll of loneliness as an example.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, chronic loneliness creates measurable inflammation and stress on the human body. An AI cannot run a scan to cure loneliness, and it cannot prescribe a medication for it.
No, it definitely can't.
So if doctors are freed from the drudgery of basic diagnostics, they might finally have the time and emotional bandwidth to treat the whole human experience.
Okay, I hear that, but I have to push back on that optimism just a bit.
Fair enough.
It sounds beautiful in theory, but let's look at the historical precedent of new medical technology. Think about the rollout of electronic health records, or EHRs.
Oh, yeah. That is a highly relevant comparison.
Right. The entire promise of digitizing patient files was that it would create seamless integration and free up doctors' time for better bedside manner.
And the reality was quite different.
It was a disaster for bedside manner. The unintended consequence was that it turned highly trained physicians into late-night data entry clerks.
Staring the screens.
Exactly. They now sit in exam rooms staring at screens just to satisfy the software's input requirements. The interface of the technology completely dictated human behavior.
The screen became the primary focus.
And the human patient became a secondary data source. So if AI creates an avalanche of correlative alerts from millions of patients' smartwatches, doctors won't be freed up to cure loneliness.
You think they'll just be overwhelmed?
Yeah, they'll just be buried under a new type of algorithmic drudgery, just triaging machine alerts all day.
You are hitting on the core vulnerability of integrating AI into complex systems. The tool that is supposed to serve the practitioner often demands that the practitioner serve it.
Exactly.
And that avalanche of correlative data makes the garbage in, garbage out problem terrifying in a medical context.
Which naturally brings us to the really dark side of all this. The panel brought up a chilling, real-world example of this outside of medicine.
Oh, the targeting system.
Yeah. There was a recent news story about a bombing in Iran, a strike allegedly guided by an artificial intelligence targeting system.
Right.
The problem was that the AI reportedly used outdated data about a decommissioned naval base to make its recommendation.
It perfectly illustrates how data has a shelf life. The AI analyzed satellite imagery, or old intelligence, registered a high-value target, and executed its logic.
Without any context.
Right. It lacked the human context to understand that political shifts over time had turned that area into a civilian zone.
So what does this all mean for culpability? When a machine makes a life or death mistake, whether it's an airstrike guided by old maps or a misdiagnosis based on flawed training data, who is actually holding the bag?
That exact vulnerability brings us directly to the dystopian themes of The Dream Hotel. Specifically, how predictive algorithms disproportionately target and penalize certain demographics.
Yeah, the book really gets into that.
And during the Q&A, Dr. Vasco Ramirez addressed this through the lens of systems theory, introducing the concept of an attractor.
Okay, let's define that, because it's crucial for understanding algorithmic bias. What is an attractor?
In systems theory, an attractor is a state toward which a system naturally tends to evolve over time.
Okay.
Think of it like gravity. If you drop a marble into a large bowl, gravity dictates that the marble will always roll to the lowest point.
Right. It just settles at the bottom.
Exactly.
And if that bowl is warped by historical bias, the lowest point is always going to be an inequitable outcome.
That is the danger. If a technology is built on a foundation of historical medical data that prioritized, say, male physiology, that systemic bias acts as a gravitational pull.
So if an algorithm is trained primarily on how men experience heart attacks, it fundamentally misdiagnoses women who often present with entirely different symptoms.
Yes, exactly.
It gets worse, doesn't it? Because that misdiagnosis is then fed back into the system as new, quote unquote, accurate data.
Yep. Which only reinforces the algorithm's blind spot for the next generation of patients. It creates a self-reinforcing loop.
That is terrifying.
It is. No matter how sophisticated the mathematical model is, if you do not actively build massive counterweights into the system, it will constantly pull the results back toward inequality.
It's basically laundering human bias through the illusion of objective math.
That's a great way of putting it. Dr. Alvey argued the only way to break the attractor is at the training level. We must explicitly teach AI models about sex differences, diverse backgrounds, and genetic variations before they ever reach the clinic.
And he also pointed out that the resulting technology has to be cheap and accessible, right?
Yes, absolutely crucial.
Because if only the wealthy can afford these predictive wearables, the health gap just widens exponentially. That's why he views the smartphone as the ultimate vehicle for equity, since the hardware is already in billions of pockets globally.
But, you know, the bias isn't just in the hard biological data. It is in how we psychologically interact with these machines.
Oh, so?
Well, An audience member, Dr. Allison Laster, she's a psychologist, brought up a vital concept she calls supportive skepticism.
Supportive skepticism.
Yeah. She mentioned a patient who used an AI chatbot to resolve a workplace dispute.
Oh, interesting.
The patient fed different perspectives of the dilemma into the AI, asking it to act as an objective judge, and they felt incredibly validated by the machine's response.
But the patient completely missed the optical illusion there. They were the ones writing the prompt.
Exactly.
The data we feed the machine is already skewed by our own emotional blind spots and our ego.
The machine only knows the version of the story we tell it. Dr. Laster's point is that we cannot afford to just be skeptical of the AI's outputs. We must constantly question our own inputs.
Well, yeah.
We have to interrogate the assumptions we bring to the keyboard.
So taking all of this into account, the micro delays, the bias attractors, the sheer volume of our data, what does the actual future look like?
Well, they got into that.
Because during the panel, a recent headline was mentioned where scientists used electrical brain signals to vaguely reconstruct what a rat was looking at.
Yeah, mind-reading rats.
Right. Are we really heading toward a world where AI can literally read our dreams and predict our crimes, just like in Lalami's novel?
The panelists were asked to make 30-year predictions based on the book's premise, and their visions were actually highly pragmatic.
Okay, what did they say?
Dr. Alavi envisions a future defined by social robotics. And he doesn't necessarily mean a physical robot, but a deeply integrated AI companion that constantly interacts with your biological wearables.
So it monitors that electrical grid we talked about earlier.
Yes. Imagine an AI that notices your heart rate variability is dropping and your cortisol markers are spiking.
Okay.
It infers you have had an incredibly stressful day and proactively engages you in a conversation through your earpiece to talk you out of a destructive habit, like pouring a large drink or smoking.
Oh, wow.
It acts as a highly personalized behavioral intervention system.
I mean, depending on how you view privacy, that is either an algorithmic guardian angel or a completely dystopian digital nanny.
Right. It's a fine line. And Dr. Vasco Ramirez took a slightly different angle.
What was his take?
He believes that while truly deciphering the narrative cinema of our dreams might remain science fiction, the core mechanism of the novel predictive behavioral modeling is already arriving.
Yeah.
He predicts a massive expansion of risk scoring.
Like a credit score, but for your biology.
Yeah.
We already accept the concept of financial credit scores dictating whether we can buy a house or get a loan.
Exactly. Your health metrics, your sleep patterns, your dietary habits, and your behavioral data will be aggregated to score your future risks.
That is unsettling.
And this isn't totally speculative. We are seeing rudimentary versions of this today, with risk assessment algorithms used in criminal sentencing and parole decisions.
Right. Algorithms that have faced intense scrutiny for exhibiting the exact demographic biases we discussed earlier with the attractor model.
Yep. So the true dystopia isn't necessarily a sci-fi machine reading your mind while you sleep.
No, it's much more mundane than that. It's an insurance company or a prospective employer looking at a three-digit score generated by the micro delays in your smartwatch. And deciding you were simply too high of a biological risk to hire or insure.
We are building systems of unprecedented power, capable of seeing correlations in the human body we could never perceive on our own.
Yeah.
The ongoing challenge is ensuring we do not accidentally automate our historical biases or surrender our human agency to an algorithm that doesn't actually understand what it means to be alive.
Man, that is a tremendous amount to process. We've journeyed all the way from treating the body like a mechanical clock to mapping the micro delays of our cardiovascular system to the very real threat of biological risk scores.
That's a lot.
It is. We really want to extend a huge thank you to the Pasadena Library, their One City, One Story program, and the brilliant panelists at HMRI for providing such a rich foundation for today's exploration.
I just leave everyone with this thought. Think about the smartwatch currently strapped to your wrist and the massive stream of data you are giving away just for the sake of convenience. If AI were to scrape all of your digital and biological data right now to generate a risk score for your future, what story would those raw numbers tell a machine, and what vital parts of your humanity would be entirely left out of the equation?
Wow. It makes you look at that glowing screen a whole lot differently. The crystal ball might be giving you an answer, but maybe it doesn't even know the right question. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.